everybody. This is Brian from Comicsverse. I'm sitting down today with a man who needs no introduction, but we're going to do it anyway for the sake of formality. Chris Claremont, if you've ever read an X-Men comic, you've probably read something he's written. The man's a legend. Mr. Claremont, thank you so much for sitting down to talk to us today.
Thanks.
So I wanted to start off by asking, we did a podcast interview with you a little while ago, and what I really found surprising was that when you first got your job at Marvel, you weren't really you weren't really there to say, you know, I'm going to be doing this for a large portion of my writing career.
No.
You were just kind of like, yeah, I'm just going to try it.
I didn't have a writing career.
Yeah.
I was an actor.
Do you feel like, as someone who has had their feet in both worlds, do you feel like comic scripts are no different from play scripts, or do you feel like they have a very different writing process and things like that?
They're fundamentally different. I mean, writing comics is a literary form. Writing film scripts is a film form. You're writing dialogue telling stories that actors will portray. Here I'm writing. An artist will present the visual interpretation of each panel, each scene, but it's writing, it's not acting. So that they are similar, but totally different.
Do you, as someone who has written the book for so many years, think you can pinpoint why the X-Men have had such resonance for the gay community? Because I think part of the reason why so many people are here, and I don't think it would be wrong to say this, have fallen in love with the X-Men in part because of all the work that you've done. Do you think you could pinpoint why it resonates with them so much?
I can theorize, but I also think it's presumptuous of me to make that analysis. That's something that a more impartial academic analyst could come up with. The book has always ended up speaking for outsiders, for people trying to find a safe place for themselves in the world, in society, even as the society is being redefined before their eyes. You know, in my case, it was just a matter of creating interesting people and putting them through hell as it is varied and exciting a manner possible.
So you have a sort of death of the author philosophy that wasn't necessarily your intention to put that subtext in there, but that people can pull it out.
No. The intention was the X-Men are inherently outsiders.
Right, right.
This has always been the story of outsiders trying to establish, find, build a place for themselves in a greater society that is not comfortable with them. But that is not a metaphor that is exclusive to the specific gay community. It also applies to ethnicities, to religions, to genders. I don't specify, partly for the cheap commercial reason that I want these characters in the day to appeal to as broad a spectrum of audience as possible, an inclusive audience. What you draw from it may well be there, but I wasn't then and not incredibly eager now to specify one or the other, because there's a tendency, if one gets specific, that's very close to exclusional. And that's never been what the X-Men was.
Because that is something that's specific to the X-Men, was that when you sat down, when you got that assignment, did you say, okay, I have to make sure that the characters that I create from here on out have that inclusive element to them? Was that something you intended, or just happened?
Well, it's intended, but not... I want it to be controversially inclusive.
Right.
You make characters that are empathetic and attractive to the audience because you want the audience to come back from issue to issue and read the book. I mean... there was no percentage in me creating the adventures of a team of assholes.
Were there any characters or any moments in the book that you were sort of surprised by your readers' reactions to it, whether good or bad?
All of them.
What do you mean by all of them?
I have never quantified or specificized the title to readers because it is their enjoyment, their book to enjoy, to find whatever moments are right for them, whatever kicks hard into their soul. God Loves was really the only story in the canon that was set out where I actually set out from the beginning to try and say something, and was fortunate enough to find a story that allowed me to do so and to resonate, to come up with words and images that resonated appropriately. But everything else is, again, it's always a work in progress, because each generation of readers finds new stuff to appreciate, and in some cases stuff that I hadn't recognized or realized at the time was there, which is entirely appropriate and very, very cool.
Does it ever frustrate, I mean, going back to God Loves, Man Kills, does it worry you in some ways that you could probably publish that book more or less word for word the same way and it would still have the same resonance and relevance that it does now? I mean, I remember when I first picked up that book, it kind of felt like William Stryker was like a group like the Westboro Baptist Church. You know, there's still groups like that that exist in the world. Do you ever worry that sometimes your messages aren't getting through as well as they could?
It has nothing to do with my messages. It has everything to do with society. I mean, the society I envisaged in 2016 when I wrote Days of Future Past is not the society of 2016 that exists. In some ways, the society that exists is more disturbing and frightening than we imagined back in the day. One could say it's the best of times in that the United States has elected twice a black president and prospered as a result. And yet, and this year we've nominated a woman to be president, and yet the anodyne is right across the aisle running against her. The harder one side pulls, the harder the other side digs in its heels to resist. And sadly, the more clearly the middle ground seems to be consumed in the middle. We'll just have to hold our breaths and see what happens next and work as hard as possible to achieve the outcome we think is best.
Do you think that art, like your X-Men writing, can hopefully change society in some way? Do artists have a responsibility to try and change society for the better?
Artists have a responsibility to tell a story to the best of their ability. Whether the story has resonance beyond the immediate enjoyment can be an accident of fate, can be the intent of the author, can be sheer, well, I already said accident of fate. Did J.K. Rowling intend that Harry Potter be a life-changing, world-changing epic? No, but it did. You play the hand you're dealt and hopefully have a good time in the process. But bear in mind, people that resonate to my X-Men are resonating to a vision of the characters and the stories and the concepts that is now over a quarter century out of date. That the book still has the power to influence them and to attract them is awesome.
Yeah.
You know, but Marvel has moved on from that point. The X-Men and and have moved on from that point. That for better or worse, is very little to do now with me. Right. My goal, my ambition is to ensure that the work I do, that I hopefully own and have control over, speaks with the same resonance or more resonance and more power.
So I have one final question, and this is something that about the X-Men that I feel like has been debated for a while, and I feel like, even though you said earlier you don't see yourself as an expert, but I think a lot of people look to you as someone who knows a lot about these characters and could say...
I could say I know a lot about my characters or my vision of those characters, but yeah.
So in your vision of these characters, one thing that's constantly debated about is this idea that Professor X represents, because these characters created during the Civil Rights Movement, Professor X represents like a Martin Luther King perspective, while Magneto represents a Malcolm X perspective. I don't know if I fully agree with that, but I'm curious to hear your thoughts on it. I've always wanted to ask you.
One could look at history and see that both Martin Luther King and Malcolm X were evolving. I mean, both of them died at a tragically young age. The difference between how Martin Luther King looked at the world at the age of 38 versus what he would have, how he would have felt, how he would have acted 30 years later, the same with Malcolm X. I mean, imagine if both of them lived to see the election of Obama.
Yeah.
Would they have viewed that as a good thing or a bad thing? Would they have viewed his administration at this point as a plus or a minus? Who's to say? It is rare, the conflict between ideals and tactics and goals is both fundamental but also evolutionary. How Magneto acted in X-Men 103 when he was reborn is not how he acted in 150 when he almost killed Kitty. It's not how he acted in 200 when he went up before the world court and fought to save Charles' life. Is not how he acted in 250 leading the New Mutants. My intent as writer was to grow him and evolve him to the point where he would take Charles' place as a more active but problematic leader of the X-Canon, because Charlie's character was essentially set in stone. He's the good guy.
Right.
All he can do as the good guy is fail. Whereas there's really no struggle in him, or that I perceive. With Magneto, you had an ongoing struggle for the yin and the yang of his personality, between the hero in his soul and the demon in the ways he chose to bring it about. Which, viewed on the through the prism of headmaster of the Xavier School, leader of the New Mutants or mentor of the New Mutants, puts him in a whole different level of a structure of conflict, and to me made him more empathetic as a hero. To me as a writer.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, Marvel as a corporation had a different vision of how he should be approached and presented. And since it's their cash, they win the argument. It's not to say that either of us is wrong. It is to say that we are both different and that their opinion had substantially more weight than mine. So, that's how it goes.
Well, thank you so much for answering that. I thought that was really interesting to hear. I never considered some of those points about Magneto.
He doesn't exist in a vacuum in reality any more than he does in the comic. He is subject to the circumstances and events of his world, fictional world, but also to the circumstances and events of the real world around the the people who create his stories and the publisher who subsidizes and publishes them. And from that context, the publisher of necessity reserves the right to have the last word. And the creators have the option of either acknowledging it and going along with it, or moving on to a different venue. And that's the way it is. Doesn't diminish the struggle, doesn't diminish the character, it just gives it a context. But that's, again, why the Harry Potter that you see today is the product exclusively of J.K. Rowling's imagination and craft and skill, whereas if she had sold the rights to a publisher, it would not be. So there you have the difference between the two.
Well, ChrisCramon.com, make sure you check it out. Follow this guy. He's a legend for a reason. Thank you again for sitting down to talk to us today. And I think I speak for every X-Men fan out there and just every fan of fiction in general. Thank you for everything you've done. You've really changed the way things are done. And everybody, make sure that you like and subscribe to our videos on Comicsverse. We've got more coverage of FlameCon. Be sure to check it out, and thanks for watching.